Hi, this is Mac of Mac's List. Find Your Dream Job is presented by Mac's List, an online community where you can find free resources for your job search, plus online courses and books that help you advance your career. My latest book is called Land Your Dream Job Anywhere. It's a reference guide for your career that covers all aspects of the job search, including expert advice in every chapter. You can get the first chapter for free by visiting maxlist.org/anywhere. This is Find Your Dream Job, the podcast that helps you get hired, have the career you want, and make a difference in life. I'm Mac Pritchard, your host and publisher of Mac's List. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Lila O'Hara and Jessica Black from the Mac's List team. This week, we're talking about how to read between the lines of a job posting. Many job seekers treat a job posting as a list of facts about the position. That's a mistake, according to Justin Dux, our guest expert this week. He says a position description often includes subtle clues and red flags that everybody can understand. If you learn to read between the lines, you can become a more competitive candidate, and you can avoid ending up in a snake pit. Justin and I talk later in the show. Record numbers of people today work remotely from home, and these employees can live anywhere. One U.S. governor hopes you will bring your remote job to his state, and he will give you $10,000 if you do so. Lila tells us more in a moment. We all want balance in our life. At the end of life, nobody ever wishes they'd spent more time at the office. But what does a good work-life balance look like? That's our question of the week, and it comes from listener Leonard Bryan in Westland, Oregon. Jessica shares her advice shortly. As always, let's first check in with the Mac's List team, and I'm sitting around the studio table here with Jessica and Lila. And Lila, you're up first, because you, as always, have spent the last week. I know you do other things besides poking around
the
internet.
That's true, yeah.
There are newsletters and blog posts. And, but you also...
It's a good mix.
Yeah, I get in there, yeah.
But you're
always
also...
Always looking.
So what have you uncovered this week?
Yeah, this week I found a really interesting article from theladders.com. And if you're somebody out there who's looking for a job where you can work remotely, get paid up to $10,000 in relocation fees, and live in a rural environment, then I think this is an opportunity you might really be interested in. Because this week, Vermont Governor Phil Scott signed a new law that will pay eligible remote workers up to $10,000 to move to Vermont.
That's $10,000.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's a lot of money. Yeah. And if you're interested, you'll need to become a full-time Vermont resident on or after January 1st, 2019, which is pretty soon. And you'll also need to prove you're a full-time remote worker for a company outside of the state. And if you can prove those two items, then Vermont will pay for your relocation expenses by giving you up to $5,000 a year for 2 years.
So they must be just looking to grow their population, and I know you're going to tell us more, but
I am right about to tell you, but great. you're correct. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Jessica's jumping in.
You guessed correctly.
I want to know what the catch is.
Yeah, there is a catch.
Let's hear the catch.
Yeah. So Vermont is hoping to use this program to boost their economy and grow their population because a lot of their population is aging out of the workforce and they only have 625 residents statewide. Which means that they have a very small tax base and a very high demand for young workers, particularly.
That's 625,000, not 625 residents.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. A little bit of a difference there, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's also not the first state to try this out, which I thought was interesting. There's a couple small towns in Michigan and Ohio that are also offering financial incentives for people who are willing to move to their states in order to address worker shortages.
I like that idea. I think that's a really good way. I mean, I think there's ways to just boost tourism in general, but having people move there. And now that we do have so much of a remote worker sort of boom, or it's easy mm-hmm. to work remotely, that you don't have to necessarily have an office or have an in-person work environment there. So
yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, times have changed a lot. So I thought that was really worth noting too. And if you're a job seeker who's interested in working remotely, I also found this website called weworkremotely.com, which is like a huge, they claim they're the largest online community of remote workers. And just from glancing through there, they had a lot of programming, marketing, design, and copywriting jobs for people who don't want to be tied down to a particular location. Or if you just don't want to commute to work, you want to save money that way. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of great options out there for people looking for remote work.
Or if you're just looking for work in those industries, it might mm-hmm. be a good place to look.
Yeah, it could be a great next opportunity for you. And yeah, one reason I found this article so interesting is because we kind of have the opposite problem here in Portland, like in terms of people moving here, because with Vermont, there might not be a ton of people moving there, but Portland is growing super fast and super rapidly. We have a huge influx of young millennial workers moving in. Mm-hmm. So the housing market is booming and more taxpayers are arriving. And you would think that the job market is like thriving and we're doing great, but for employers, I think it's still really tough.
Well, I think that's interesting that you brought that up, because it is similar in that sense that there are a lot of remote workers from California or other states that are still they're still employed with their jobs wherever it is, but they are living in Portland.
That's also true, yeah.
And not exclusively true, but I think is that's a big factor in Portland as well. And so that's really interesting. It's just really interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe Vermont needs to do a TV show like Vermontlandia or something like that.
Maybe.
Kind of like Portlandia.
Something to draw people in, yeah.
Not sure that's what brought people to Portland. But it was probably a factor, Jessica.
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's just interesting because depending on where you live, there's just different, you know, problems that job seekers or employers face, because there's, you know, 4% unemployment here. That just makes it really competitive out there for employers looking for job seekers.
Definitely.
And yeah, as more and more baby boomers and the older generation starts to hit retirement age, it's just interesting to think about what cities are going to do to keep up. Will we see more cities taking up the strategy that Vermont's using and paying younger workers to move into their state? Or will we see young workers like willing to relocate to these like kind of rural environments away from the big city? Because states and cities need a growing population of young, educated taxpayers and workers to thrive. But I just find it interesting, and I'm fascinated to see how these rural areas keep up with the just rapid growth of cities.
Yeah.
I agree with you that it's really fascinating. I'm glad that you brought this up.
Yeah.
I think you both know I grew up in Iowa, and it's very common for people after college, many of them to leave the state. There was a governor in the early 2000s who launched a campaign to encourage former Iowa residents to return. And his administration, I think 3 or 4 times a year, would send newsletters to former residents. And I got on the list because I'm a University of Iowa graduate. It didn't really work, but there was no cash incentive. Mm. But there was a strategic effort to try to persuade people to return. Coincidentally, I went back for my Harvard Kennedy School reunion, and he was at a reception, and I went up and chatted him, and I said, "Hey, I'm a former Iowa resident." He said, "Why didn't you come back?" And for me personally, the answer was quality of life. It's just better here in the Pacific Northwest. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if money is enough of a motivator to persuade people to go to Vermont, which is a lovely state, but it's.
I think that's an interesting point, Mac, because I do think that that money is a good motivator, but there has to be a full onslaught of factors that contribute to that. And there are some people who really like rural living,
sure.
And really are pursuing that and trying to get out of the larger cities and move to quieter spaces that they can have that type of life. But I think there also needs to be an effort. I mean, it all goes back to marketing drives everything, right? Is that you have to reach the right people that are going to be the folks who are going to quote unquote fit in that environment and that are going to thrive in that environment. Because if you're talking to urbanites, about come to the country and live in the country and we'll give you $5,000 a year, that's not really going to have any kind of return on investment. But if you're reaching the right people who are really craving that quiet life, then I think that would be a good motivator.
Good point.
Yeah.
Good. Well, thank you both. And thank you, Leela, for bringing those resources to our attention. If you've got an idea for Leela, please write her. We'd love to share your suggestion on the show. Her address is leela@maxlist.org. Now let's turn to you, our listeners. And Jessica Black has been adding to the MaxList mailbag all week long. I know the emails just keep pouring in.
They do, which is great.
They do.
I love to hear them, yeah. And I love to get them. And I got a note from someone on LinkedIn the other day. So
okay, good.
However you want to send me your question, just go ahead.
All right, terrific. Well, what's in the mailbag this week? What question did you pull out?
We have a question this week from Leonard Bryan, who is from West Lynn, Oregon, one of the suburbs of Portland. And he asks, a lot of people talk about finding an employer that offers a good work-life balance. How do you all, the Find Your Dream Job team, define work-life balance? And what is your advice for finding employers who match your definition? So I think this is a great question because I think that work-life balance is sort of on the minds of a lot of people right now as we're shifting gears from just finding employers that are going to, you know, pay you and have a place to go every day and every week. People are also looking for other ways that they can find meaning from their jobs. And sometimes that comes in to play with the work-life balance and talking about remote work having an increase. There are a lot more opportunities for people to want to work remotely or have flexible jobs as parents or however that looks for them. And so I think this is a really good question. And I think what makes a quote unquote good work-life balance is going to depend on who you are as a person. It's going to differ for each person. But I do want to share a bit about the MaxList team and what we do for work-life balance. And these are just a couple of the things that we do. But we have a flexible work schedule in that we work from home on Friday. So we have the typical Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 or 8 to 4, however that looks. But we do work from home on Fridays. And I think that provides a good opportunity for people to have a respite from meetings sometimes, or you can work from your pajamas or work from a coffee shop or just have a space that you can feel like you can be out of the office but still doing work and be trusted to get that all done. So I think that's really important. And along those same lines, we have a flexible and trusting team that accommodates time off needs, good sick leave policy and PTO policy that is sort of a, you know, if you need to take time off, then we will just let us know kind of a thing. It's not super strict. And I think that trusting the team to get things done and that everybody's in it together will cover each other to keep things going well, I think that's really important. And we also, one of the important things that I feel is important is that we encourage a full disconnect when people are on vacation. And so and managers who lead by example on this. For example, Mac takes a vacation a couple of times a year, but at least once a year, a long-term 3 or 4 week vacation, and disconnects completely, is not available for work email. You know, you don't check your work email while you're out and that sort of thing. And I think that is a really good model for others of us in the office to to take the hint on of, you know, when you're on vacation, you should be away so that you can fully recharge. And I think that's really important. And, you know, these are just a couple of things that I wanted to point out. There's definitely other things that go into this and go into work-life balance. But this is something that's really important to me as well. And this is these are the questions that I asked during my interview process with MaxList, just to make sure that there are just to be able to understand what that looks like, and because it does differ for every person. And, you know, I asked questions like, do people eat lunch at their desks? Is that expected of people? Do, you know, and that goes to the larger model of, is this a place that you work all the way through lunch and you're expected to just be tied to your desk all the time? And that's, the answer was no. And which is wonderful, because that's really important to me that there are times that you do get to disconnect and you do get to walk away from your job and you're not having to answer emails at 7 p.m. and you're discouraged from that and those types of things. So long story short, I would say depending on your own needs. So number one, Leonard, I would say check in with what's important to you. You know, write down the things that are really important to you of what makes a good work-life balance for you. And start doing some research online. So for example, I think a while ago, Ben shared a resource about parents finding employers who offer flexible work schedules for being able to match their children's school schedules, things like that. And another way to do this is for example, I entered how to find employers with work-life balance into Google, and there were several lists of companies reputed to have excellent work-life balance. So that's a really good place to start, and then you can sort of comb through and see what comes up for you from that. And again, the main way I would suggest doing this is to just talk to people, have some informational interviews with people that you have in your network already that are working in companies that you would like to work for, that you're curious about. Reach out and just have those types of questions. And I would just, again, encourage, know what that looks like for you so that you know what your goals are, so that, because one company can have a quote unquote great work-life balance, but that doesn't match with what your work-life balance is. And so that's not going to help you at all if it doesn't match your needs and your desires. So what else would you guys add?
Yeah, I think that for Leonard to really thrive and figure out what his ideal work-life balance is, I think one thing he has to do is just kind of look at, you know, what are his needs and his kind of like personal priorities. If he's the type of person that needs to take a walk at lunch every day to kind of clear his head and refresh, or if he needs a place where he can like work remotely or have a solid baseline of paid time off. Those are all things he kind of needs to identify and then find an employer who can like give him that level of work-life balance. So I think you made a great point with that, Jessica.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would only add that when you're considering employers, ask to look at the employee handbook. Do they provide parental leave?
Mm-hmm.
How many holidays? What are the vacation policies? And, you know, here at MaxList, we close between Christmas and New Year's with pay.
That's one of my favorite benefits.
So yeah.
Yeah.
And it took us a number of years to adopt that policy. But as an employer, I learned that most people would take that time off. Some wouldn't. They'd come in. I'd tell everyone to go home early.
Mm-hmm.
So why not just tell them to go home?
Right.
And they're much more productive in the end.
I was going to say, you have mentioned that, you know, everybody comes back much more refreshed because spending time with families and just having that time off is really important. And you know, that time of year is very, most people are not working that time of year anyway. And so it's better to just close it down.
Yeah. So it's a great question, Leonard. And I appreciate you asking it. And thanks for the good advice, Jessica. If you've got a question for Jessica, please send her an email. That address is jessica@maxlist.org. You can also call that listener line. We'd love to get a recording from you, area code 716-JOB-TALK, or post your question on the MaxList Facebook group. If we use your question on the show, like Leonard, you'll get a copy of Land Your Dream Job Anywhere. We'll be back in just a moment, and when we return, I'll talk with this week's guest expert, Justin Dux, about how to read between the lines of a job posting. If you're listening to this show, there are two things I know about you. First, you're a fan of podcasts. Second, you're looking for tools and tips that can help you get a great job and move ahead in your career. That's why I'm excited to announce MaxList's newest resource, and it's designed for podcast listeners like you. We just published the 2018 edition of the Top Career Podcast Guide. It's a directory of this year's best podcasts for finding a job that matters and building the career you want. This is our most complete podcast guide ever. You'll discover 78 great shows from around the world. From resume writing advice to salary negotiation tips, you'll find great shows to help you tackle any job search challenge. Get your free copy of Top Career Podcast Guide today. Go to topcareerpodcasts.com. Again, that's topcareerpodcasts.com. Now, let's get back to this podcast. Now, let's turn to this week's guest expert, Justin Dux. Justin Dux hosts Career Cloud Radio. It's a podcast for job seekers that began in 2007. He regularly interviews job hunting experts who offer useful and actionable tips, and he is a proud graduate of the Twin Cities campus of the University of Minnesota. Justin joins us today from St. Paul, Minnesota. Justin, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited about this conversation because, you know, you're a fellow podcaster, and I'm impressed that your show has been on for more than a decade. That's quite an accomplishment for you and your predecessors.
Thank you. Chris Russell founded the show, and it changed ownership last year. So we just passed our 1 year, or I just passed my 1 year mark of being a host. So.
Oh, that's terrific. Today we're talking about job postings, and there's an art to reading these postings, you say, and you find, however, that most job seekers just scan a posting quickly before they prepare an application. Justin, why is that a problem?
I'm hearing from guests and others that culturally we're changing how we consume information. And, you know, it starts with skimming, but it actually, the end result is you stop looking entirely. So you might read a posting and never click into it. Read a title, that would be a job title, and never click into it. And so a lot of people will complain that I'm not seeing any opportunities that match my skill set, but they've ruled out hundreds of opportunities that never came across their face or their computer screen in this example.
Well, how should our listeners read a job posting? What do you recommend and what should they look for?
I recommend that they take a step backwards from the end goal, which is I want to find a job to apply to tonight. And if you work backwards and say, I need to find out what the market is looking for, and I need to understand the patterns that are appearing in these job postings, you actually have to consume or read a ton more job postings than you think necessary, because those patterns don't start developing or understandings, that's what they become, for maybe a couple months. So what that looks like for somebody is they're monitoring job boards even while they have a career they're happy with, and getting alerts from job boards even when they think they're not looking, maybe like a passive job seeker at that stage. For those of you that are more urgent, obviously you got to put this on steroids and do all of this kind of research every day, but it's much more manageable if you kind of take a longer view on it and say, I'm going to keep my finger on this pulse so that I always have that information ready when it's time to apply.
What patterns do you recommend that people look for when they study job posts? What should jump out at the job seeker, and what can they learn from that?
So it kind of breaks into about three different areas for me. The obvious, the one that'll seem kind of obvious, but I want to try to dig deeper on, is recognizing things to avoid. So there's two areas there, avoiding things with the responsibilities of the job and avoiding red flags with the employer and what might be happening in that company. So I would describe that as like avoid the sinking ship. If you're not happy with the headlines in Uber or another company that's hitting headlines right now, or a mining company or something, then maybe you do want to stay away from that if they're looking for a new head of privacy or a new head of HR or something like that. Now, if you're the type of person who likes to rescue a sinking ship, then maybe you run towards that burning fire, but you never want to be in a company that's revenue is about to go down or going down for reasons that are completely out of your control. Because when you're developing a career, you obviously want to step into a situation that you can succeed in.
And is that information you get from a job posting, Justin? Or if you find a position, say an opportunity at Uber, then you do the research and you find out more about the company through other sources?
Great point. You would bring in informational interviews with people that work there already if you add that company to your short list. And so if you're doing this over the course of a year or two, let's say, kind of, like I said, you're starting at a time where you're probably happy in your career, you have more time to set up those informational interviews. But more importantly, you have more time to develop a short list. So here in the Twin Cities, my list is only about 15 companies right now that I would now say are on my short list. And for a lot of people that I talk to, that short list might even be less, a few companies. But what you do is you start to research that company more heavily. Now you're reading articles about the company, maybe diving into their shareholders' notes. There's a wealth of information in shareholder meeting minutes if the company is public.
Okay.
Because it talks about the goals they're working on. And anytime they word it as a goal, you can also translate that into the problem they're probably trying to solve, because most companies don't dump millions of dollars of investment unless they also see that as a problem.
Okay. So we talked about red flags and how research can help you identify those, and goals and how they can help you understand the employer's needs and challenges. What are some other clues that people should look for, Justin, as they review job postings and try to find those patterns?
The one that I find fascinating is what I would call unusual search terms or unusual keywords. And this information I learned from Textio, T-E-X-T-I-O, but they really inspired me to change how I was searching and other people. Because I don't think a lot of people sit down and think to put into a search engine like Indeed or ZipRecruiter, name your favorite right there. But a term like dream, quote unquote, people wouldn't think to search for that. But Textio's research determined that teachers will find those jobs and apply to those jobs 21 days faster than a school that's not using that word inside their job posting somewhere. And so, that's looking at it from the hiring perspective, but I'm coming at it from the candidate perspective and saying, why don't we search for those things that are that important to us that we would apply sooner, where those positions would fill faster? If it's important to you, you should be searching for it. Might be a little limiting to use like vacation time, but I will say unlimited vacation time as your keyword might be something worth looking up, especially if you're trying to deal with two kids or a family or something like that. Some other creative examples might be lasting relationships. If you're dealing with like a sales career or something like that, that would be huge, because that shows the employer's culturally aware that we're not trying to make transactions here. We're not trying to bring in revenue. We're actually trying to form lasting relationships with our customers. And they put that wording right into the job posting. Something like hungry for is usually like a verb. Verbs work better for this technique, by the way. Hungry for, and then fill in the blank. But you're finding these unusual terms and then using them repeatedly. So when I say finding, that means we talked about a moment ago. You're consuming postings that you never intended to apply to. And that's part of the gate you have to get past mentally, is that, yeah, you are clicking into postings that are just intriguing or a little less than intriguing. to try to pick up these clues that might be in the form of these unusual keywords, and then stop reading after you find one and say, what if I were to put this in as a term and see what that comes up with? So I just I did a test on that last night, and I found an interesting phrase that I wasn't using before, design, build, create. Like a posting I had found that I had no intention of applying to had used those three words right next to each other, design, build, and create. And they were referring to some sort of process in a skill set that I work in. And I went and I punched that in about 5 minutes of clicking on a couple different job titles, different postings, I found some really interesting stuff that was not on my radar at all because of my usual terms. Did that make sense?
It does. And what you're describing, as I listen to you, Justin, is really a search engine marketing approach to identifying both companies and positions that might not normally appear on someone's radar. Because I think most job seekers, don't you agree, Justin, they think, well, I want to work at this company, or I want to find a position with this job title. And what I'm hearing you say is you can do that, but you won't see opportunities that might be even more interesting.
Even more interesting and even more of a match to your skills. So for the last year and a half, I've been developing skills in Salesforce. And I think that that's going to show up in the job title itself. It's just natural to make that assumption. And the techniques I'm describing here are meant to break those habits. So, you know, the end result was last night I find a position that's titled Technology Enablement Specialist, which I would never have searched for. But I found what I would describe as a perfect match for my background because it describes supporting sales reps because I did 10 years of sales and working with their Salesforce processes that enable those their sales team. And the last thing that made me really intrigued about this one is a point that I really want to make for your listeners. And that is to the more you do this type of reading, this kind of deep reading, and to use your term, search engine marketing, kind of reverse engineering of job postings, the more you develop that as a skill, you'll start to be able to sense an opportunity that's bigger than described on the page. And so, you know, technology enablement specialist, you know, I shared it with some people that are close to me, and they're like, well, it seems kind of low level to you, doesn't it? I was like, not really. I'm just starting my career. It's not as advanced. It's not like I've been at this 10 years or something like that. I've got a foundation to build just like anyone else. And I think that's the key, is like all the clues accumulate to mean something more. And it's an intuition that's really hard to describe, I'm realizing, but you won't know it unless you've consumed hundreds, if not close to 1,000 job postings in your industry to be able to recognize those patterns.
What are your best tips, Justin, about identifying those keywords that you should search for? How can listeners build a list like that? What do you recommend?
It really comes down to consuming them. But it's about, as you read, how does it make you feel? So take, for example, we were talking earlier about things to avoid. If you read the word strict in a job posting, And your senses kind of tingle, like kind of get a little goosebumps, or you even see you're reading, but your mouth starts to cringe or that kind of thing. That's a sign. You should probably pick that up as a clue and even write down that word as, I'm not probably working well in a culture that's describing a strict work culture. Another thing that comes to mind is there's some marketers that are like more on the creative side. So if they're seeing words in a job posting and say detail oriented, and that makes them kind of panic a little bit, that's another clue. You might not want to prioritize this job as high as another one you might have found that week. Now, keep in mind, sometimes you only find one opportunity a week, and you probably should still apply to some of these. But I'm trying to work in an area of abundance where there's more opportunities than people realize, and you kind of have to pick the first three you want to apply to when you have a limited amount of time this weekend. So that's on the avoid side. On the more positive side, you want to be able to recognize a culture that you'll love. And these are going to be harder because they stand out in different ways. So kind of going back to that research from Textio, they've used algorithms to search across millions of job postings and then correlate that with data about how fast the positions were taken down or filled. And to their surprise, they learned that some things are popular in one city that are completely hated in another city. So I think the example they used was intense. It's the word found in the posting somewhere is, this intense culture or this intense sales environment or high pressure environment. And the word intense was received really well in San Francisco, and that attracted candidates to apply to it. And those are opportunities that you and I might be missing out on because they've already filled them. But you go over to Philadelphia and a position that's mentioning the word intense is lagging out there and staying unfilled, which is because most people in Philadelphia don't want to work in an intense environment or there's other stigmas around it.
Okay.
And so you want to recognize what those are for you. If you know a culture that you thrive in, start figuring out the language you would use to describe that and search for it.
Okay. And pay attention to your intuitive reactions, both positive and negative, and record those words and then make them part of your search strategy.
Right. And I think one of my guests said this best when it's like a lot of young people especially kind of have developed this idea that finding a job and searching for one online is a science in that it's like a machine. I'm not quoting them very well, but you get the point. And I'm trying to bring that art side back into it, which means you do have to kind of allow yourself to feel about these positions, but be objective while you're doing it. And say, well, yeah, it says detail oriented and that makes me cringe, but it doesn't change the fact that I really love accuracy. Well, you might actually still have the attribute of detail oriented because you hate inaccuracy. Does that make sense?
It does. Well, these are terrific tips, Justin, and I've enjoyed the conversation. Tell us what's next for you.
I'm continuing to work on Career Cloud Radio. It's the podcast that I took over as host for last May. We've got 10 episodes already recorded that I'm furiously working on editing and getting out there. And it's my hope that listeners find some more insights from those.
And I know you have a deep archive of episodes that stretch back to 2007. So there's a lot of good content there. And people I know can find it at careercloud.com. Justin, thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Take care. We're back in the studio with Layla and Jessica. And what are your thoughts about my conversation with Justin?
Yeah, I thought that was a really interesting conversation, Mac. One thing that I hadn't really considered before this conversation was just reading the job listing really carefully and looking for clues, whether it's clues about the company culture or clues about what they're looking for in a candidate. Those are all things that can either tell you, like, this is the right fit for me, like, this is really where I want to apply, or maybe this isn't the right job mm-hmm. for you. Because I think a lot of candidates, myself included, will just apply to a bunch of job listings that, like, because, if I was looking for a marketing coordinator position, I would just apply to a bunch of jobs with that job title. But if you take a lot closer look at the description, then you might see that, this is a marketing coordinator position, but maybe they're doing sales or maybe there's other stuff included within that job
yeah.
that, that's kind of thrown in there as a little tiny bullet or an asterisk in the description. But if you read it really closely, you can figure out like, oh, this isn't for me. Like I shouldn't be applying here.
I agree with you. I really do think that you can learn a lot about the way that the organization talks about what they do or the language that they use. Kind of, I liked that Justin mentioned that of like, if they use a word like strict or whatever that is, I liked how you can discern some things from that kind of language that they use. But also taking a look at their websites and doing some research about the organization in addition to just reading the job description, because you can also learn some things and find some either positive things or red flags by just looking at the website or looking at news articles or things like that, that you can just, as you learn more about the organization, you'll either learn if it's a good fit or maybe it's not the right fit. But what I really loved about that conversation was his suggestion about doing the reverse search of entering verbs or phrases or whatever that is into a search field. And we've talked about Textio before. We've used that as a resource before. So I liked that he brought that back up. But using that to be able to help you expand upon the job postings that you're finding that you're coming across, rather than just the job title, because sometimes organizations do have creative job titles or you don't always know. Like for me, Lila, you were searching for marketing coordinator positions, but for me, I did a lot of that just like pouring through postings just to see, reading job descriptions just to get a better understanding of what that job looked like related to the title, because I was still trying to figure out what that looked like. And I knew the types of work that I wanted to do, but I didn't know the title name. Right. So being able to, but you don't always have time to pour through thousands of job postings just to like, it's so much content and so much out there. But if you have that opportunity, please do so. Otherwise, if you have the ability to enter those search terms into something and do, I just liked that he provided that as a resource for finding other postings that you may not find through other searches that you might do.
Yeah, I liked his advice a lot, because I think there are two challenges here. One is, and you touched on this, Jessica, there's an abundance of choices.
It's never
been easier to find job postings in whatever your occupation. So how do you sort through all this information? How do you sift this data? And that Justin is offering a strategy, which is, okay, think about the keywords that either you have a positive reaction to or a negative. And it is search engine marketing or S101 applied to the job search. And I think that helps a lot. And I think the second challenge people have is not only tossing through getting the number of postings down to a manageable figure that you can apply to, but it's also being able to read the subtleties of those postings to figure out which ones might be most appealing and which ones, as he called it, might have some red flags.
Yeah.
And that will further help you reduce the number of applications that you might send out, which is important because our time is our most valuable asset. And if there are, as you say, Lila, lots and lots of marketing coordinator jobs you can apply to. You can't apply to them all.
No.
So,
and they're not all going to be the right fit, even if it's the right title for you. You still have to find the right organizational fit at the same time.
Definitely.
So how do you make the smartest, most strategic choices? And then, of course, job postings matter.
That's right.
We got a job board at MaxList. We're very proud of it. But we've talked a lot about how you need to free up your time. You can't spend all your time applying for online jobs.
Absolutely.
So you got to make wise choices. And I think Justin's offered a strategy for how to do that.
Yeah. He did. Really liked his it was a good way to disseminate some of that, of just, like you said, Mac, the abundance of what's out there to be able to sift through it. So it was really interesting.
Good. Well, thank you both for those comments, and thank you, Justin, for joining us this week. And thank you, our listeners, for downloading today's episode of Find Your Dream Job. If you're looking for more great career-focused shows like ours, make sure you check out the 2018 edition of our Top Careers Podcast Guide. You'll discover 78 programs that can help you get hired. You can get your free copy of the Top Careers Podcast today. Just go to topcareerpodcast.com. And join us next Wednesday. Our special guest will be Taranum Khan. She'll explain how to make your resume attractive to recruiters. Until next time, thanks for letting us help you find your dream job.